So top-heavy with experienced former Iraqi military officers, ISIS is trying to get bottom-heavy with recruits from around the world. Discovering how the ISIS message lands on sympathetic, in many cases well-educated ears in prosperous nations of the West is one of the challenges for U.S. intelligence agencies. Amir Ahmed Nasser understands the appeal of the group's message. Amir is the author of a memoir of his journey into the heart of the jihadist ideology, My Islam, How Fundamentalism Stole My Mind and Doubt Freed My Soul. Amir, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Put me into the mind of a potential recruit by ISIS, say someone in the Midwest of the United States or in the uplands of the United Kingdom.
Well, I can't necessarily really put you in their minds per se, but I could tell you why ISIS has a lot of appeal among individuals who feel wounded, who feel a sense of isolation and a lack of belonging, and who sympathize with the group's goals.
And that means that you would want to go off and pick up a weapon and fight in the brutal conditions in Syria and possibly lose your life like this young American did and appear in videos like the one we saw in the last couple of weeks?
Unfortunately, yeah. Unfortunately, some young men are very disillusioned with the life that they currently have, and they're looking for a sense of intoxicating purpose, and this seems to provide it. That's the ugly, disturbing truth.
Did you find that in your own journey?
No. I mean, for me, it never went to that extreme extent. You know, I would describe myself as a former religious fundamentalist. And I'm very familiar with the kind of indoctrination that, you know, young people go through and that makes them sympathetic to, you know, sort of these causes, but definitely, you know, not on this extreme end, really.
How much of a step from adopting the sort of fundamentalist outlook is it to actually take up arms and join a militia or join a group like ISIS?
The thing with the appeal of ISIS is, unlike Al-Qaeda, ISIS claims to have established a so-called Islamic State. If you look at Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda has never achieved that goal. That has been its dream for a long, long time and has never even come close to it. So you could easily just look at Al-Qaeda and say, you know what, well, there are, you know, a bunch of guys going around killing people and doing terrible things. And they can be dismissed as they are by the vast majority of Muslims. Whereas with ISIS, we can, you know, be totally disgusted with its means. But the fact is that this, you know, so-called Islamic State of theirs that they've established, the so-called state that, you know, wants to provide justice to Muslims and wants to give them a sense of participation as citizens, that has some level of appeal. And so it's a huge propaganda victory. And that's what sets them apart and makes them, in my opinion, dangerous.
What do you think ISIS wants more? Muslims from all over the world to come to this Islamic State and participate in this caliphate and show that there's a real ummah, as it's called in the Holy Quran, a Muslim community that has no border, that exists as a nation throughout the world? Or do they want fighters?
I think they don't want just any kind of fighters. They want fighters who are committed to the cause. I think we should take them at their work. They're very committed ideologically. You know, they don't want to just draw any kind of sort of casual fighters. They want people who are going to stand up and fight for the right reasons. And so the ideology is a huge aspect of what makes them what they are and a huge aspect of their success as well.
What's the counter message? What is it that's persuasive to pull someone back and use your case as a possible example? Because the challenge for intelligence agencies is going to be to unrecruit some of these people and possibly turn them into double agents.
What I would say is, you know, obviously it's an issue of hearts and minds. And that's the terrain that we really need to focus on. I think there are a lot of individuals who are very disaffected out there and who are angry and who feel, you know, lost and isolated, and joining such groups that practice such horrendous brutality and are very nihilistic, really, you know, and that use religious language and claim to be religious, there's no healthy solution whatsoever, obviously. So we really need to expose them for who they are and what they are and really go on the offensive in regards to the battle of ideas. The thing is, even if you defeat ISIS militarily, I worry that it still could be replaced easily in the future by other groups. You have to keep in mind that the conditions in the Middle East today have created this monster. When people have no avenues to express themselves and push for change, you know, there is this quote by President John F. Kennedy, and I'm paraphrasing here. Those who make nonviolent revolution or peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable. And so there are a lot of Muslims out there who are angry, who are disaffected. Once again, just regular people. They can be preyed upon by these terrorist organizations, and that's when they cross over really into the horrible dark side.
What's the Western counter message that would really imitate John F. Kennedy's message? And does the West have an opportunity here?
I think the West is going to have to work within Muslim communities and look for leaders who condemned ISIS very strongly. We need to encourage grassroots mobilization to show that communities stand against this heinous monster, and that this is not the future and doesn't in any way or form, you know, speak for decent Muslims who consider themselves to be global citizens.
Speaking to us from Vancouver, Canada, Amir Ahmed Nasser is the author of My Islam, How Fundamentalism Stole My Mind and Doubt Freed My Soul. He recently wrote about ISIS. Thanks so much, Amir.
Thank you very much.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.